You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. This is kind of Jim Jarmusch's Groundhog's Day, right? I couldn't help but think at a certain point, that was like the only thing missing at points was that it wasn't the same song that he woke up to. Like, he didn't wake up to that song every morning.
He woke up to the same watch.
The same watch, yeah. But Jarmusch's, every day is the same, except he's like, good.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I mean, you know, Adam Driver's character in this is you know, he pretty much does the same thing every day, and he's fine with that.
Yeah, this is kind of a celebration of the simple life.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, his life isn't mundane or unsatisfying at all, but yeah, he is a guy, he goes to his job. He is very much in love with his girlfriend, who he lives with.
Yeah, the gorgeous Gulshifteh Farhani.
Yes.
Despite her best attempts.
who does look a lot like the female lead in Panther Woman.
She does, indeed.
And, you know, he loves his girlfriend. He wakes up. He goes to his job, which he seems to like, if not, you know, enjoy, like. Nearly every day he writes a poem of some kind on his break, you know, right before he starts his job, and on his break he works on a poem. You know, he goes home, he fixes his permanently askew mailbox and then he, you know, catches up with his girlfriend. They generally eat a meal. He goes to take the dog for a walk, ties the dog up by his local watering hole, has like one beer, chats with the people that hang out at the bar, goes home and
rinse,
starts
repeat.
It all. Yeah, yeah. Rinse, repeat. Yeah. And that's fun. You know, like, lots of people like it. And you know, it's not like he isn't, you know, he is, you know, a creative person, a person with you know, a good degree of depth. But, you know, he's kind of the polar opposite of his girlfriend in many ways, who is kind of very much like you know, almost stereotype of the artistic type, millennial type, who is constantly
loves.
Yeah, and yeah. she's like, even though she is artsy, she's almost kind of crossing into basic territory, because she's like, the people like cupcakes, that's new craze, I'm gonna learn how to do cupcakes. Oh, I saw a commercial about, you know, learning how to play the guitar easily. I've always wanted to sing country music,
but all
guitar.
In her, like, incorporating her distinct everything must be black and white patterns.
Yeah, there was one point like the Saturday, she's got kind of like you know, every day when he wakes up, it's an overhead shot of their bed, except on Saturday, where it's a picture of her, and she's kind of, it's a straight on shot from her, and she's kind of stroking his head. And for a minute, I was like, she better not be painting that poor son of a bitch black and white.
You would not have been surprised if that happened.
You would not be surprised.
You know what?
Yeah, she has a dichromatic oeuvre, to say the least.
She reminded me of in this film, Bruce Willis's girlfriend in Pulp Fiction.
Same.
Here. Oh yeah, no, yeah. She. Totally. Maria de Medeiros. She has, even though I believe she is of Indian or Persian Middle Eastern stock.
Well, the reason I didn't.
She does resemble the Portuguese actress Maria
but
de Medeiros, who resembled one of my early girlfriends. So I found
and
her very
what
attractive.
What was Adam Driver coveting the whole time? A watch.
A watch. Oh my God!
That's true.
I didn't even realize this was a remake of Pulp Fiction.
there were no katanas or ass play in this.
No, you should not go into this, or indeed pretty much any Jim Jarmusch film, expecting action or like speed of any sort.
There's a brief, like, you know, 30-second action sequence, and that's all you get.
Yeah, and even that is kind of like almost played to the purpose of like how disconcerting it is for Adam Driver even to have a little bit of action.
Yeah, and Jarmusch's bit is always, has always been to show these long scenes of people doing the things that people do on an ordinary basis that don't have, you know, any kind of dramatic gravitas at all, and in many cases don't even propel the story. It's just like, hey, this dude gets up, he has breakfast, because that's what people do when they get up.
I mean,
there's
even when
nothing
you make a vampire movie or a samurai movie, it's more about their day-to-day lives
right.
than it is about, like, major plot events. He's not really a plot guy.
No.
He's a character guy, and he's appreciating the beauty in the mundane.
I've used this metaphor a lot when it, you know, over the course of our reviews when it comes to certain art house directors, and, you know, much like Terrence Malick, Jim Jarmusch is a poet. He's not a prose guy.
Yeah.
And so you do not get prosaic films with him. You get stuff that's a lot more ephemeral, a lot lighter. In a way, this film certainly landed with me like a lot of the poetry that is discussed in it lands with me. Like,
which, by the way, was from a real poet.
Oh, yeah. The
poet.
Do you know who the poet was who wrote it?
I had heard the name. It's not the poet that he's a fan of in the film. It's somebody else. But, it's a real...
Is it... I wonder if it's Anis Mirjani. I would not be surprised.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm gonna say Robert something.
Yeah, well...
Robert Frost.
I said, I have a number of friends in the poetry community, and I'm like, my best friend is a published poet, so I'm wondering if it's anybody that I might have heard of or rubbed elbows with. But that said, two of the people that are discussed in this, you know, one rather heavily and one just kind of alluded to are Frank O'Hara and William Carlos Williams, who write, you know, the stuff that almost looks prosaic but is actually very lyrical in ways, and that's very much. There's a lot of duality, and you know there's no question, you know, the like
twins everywhere.
every 5 minutes you're running into twins, and there's a lot of duality present in this, and you know, of the prosaic and the poetic, you know, especially in between that you know, dynamic between Adam Driver, who is perfectly content with just doing what he's doing and writing what he is writing, and not even is hesitant to identify himself as a poet at all. Whereas his girlfriend, she's like, the end game of all of her schemes is, I want to get, you know, some money and fame.
Yeah.
You know, I want a payoff for this action.
Like,
and
right.
I would like you to have that too. Throughout the whole thing, she is begging him to, all of his poems are in one notebook.
Yeah.
That's the only place they exist. He doesn't have any kind of computer or anything like
She's
that.
She's begging him
and
to reproduce the poems, to present them to anyone else other than her, because there's a disconnect between them where she doesn't get why he doesn't want the same thing she wants, and yet it doesn't really hurt their relationship.
No.
He's perfectly happy with who she is exactly.
And he's not, you know, he doesn't seem to need or want to engage with her on the topic. He's just like, okay, you know, the only like kind of slight discomfort he experiences is when she's like, I really wish you would promise me to do this. And he's like, yeah, all right, I'll see what I can do.
I mean, which probably isn't the first creative type to be that way.
No, not at all.
Being incredibly talented. And you, once again, sadly forgetting the name of the actual poet, but the poems that he writes are really good during this. And they're done in a way in which you're just kind of watching him being pensive, or things that he's seeing and actually written on the screen with his voiceover reading them. And at first they all start off almost like childlike in a way, like a sort of like, well, this is what I just saw and this is the thing. And then as they go along, they become that much more deeper, expressive, but even then in a sort of most almost purity of simplicity sort of way, much like Adam Driver is himself in this film. Ironic, he's a driver of a bus. I'm just saying. I'm wondering if the black and whiteness, his girlfriend's thing, plays into the duality.
I think, you know, there's a lot of very basic symbologies in here, which is why you keep getting the twins, you know, and instead of him addressing himself as a poet, or, you know, because if you've met a lot of poets, and I have, they're generally more than happy to discuss their own shit. And he is not, but he loves talking to other poets. And there are at least three, you know, very significant scenes in the movie where he's discussing, you know, the form with someone who readily identifies himself as an artist.
Yeah, you know, there's a wonderful scene here where he's just walking by a laundromat and Method Man is in there.
Yeah.
Who in here is playing like a guy, he's not a famous like rapper. He's practicing and wants to be one. And he's just sort of listening to it and then comes in and just honestly gives him accolades. Like, man, that's great. I love what you're doing. And they have this wonderful, almost sort of friendly meet cute over art there. And this film is filled with moments like that of just kindness.
Yeah. And there's those like little cameo moments. And then we also get, as he's driving the bus, you have like these very, Linklater-esque, bits of the passengers talking to each other and
overhearing the conversations,
right.
As he kind of smiles, just appreciating being a witness.
Absolutely. Like his entire character in this, like despite one scene, shows, you know, he a great deal of passivity, and not in a negative sense at all, but you know, he's a very gentle person that, you know, and he's very aware and listens to his surroundings. One of my favorite bits was the two kids that are discussing the Italian anarchists. Mm-hmm. Those are the two kids, Sam and Susie from Moonrise Kingdom.
Is that who that was?
Yeah.
I knew they looked familiar. I couldn't place them.
I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, I the thing about Jarmusch films, and especially his quieter films like this, if you don't like them, I can't criticize
sure.
for that. I mean, this is the film equivalent to, like, the poetry being read in this film. It's very simple, it's very beautiful, but not much is happening.
Yeah,
if anything.
If you're more of a person who's gonna, you know, sit down and read an action thriller rather than spend a day like, you know, reading a collection of William Carlos Williams, then yeah, you might not find a lot in this.
You
but,
could be a person who does both.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as I am.
I find it odd that for me, for whatever reason, Jarmusch and his appreciation of the simple always is, I found, really appealing.
Mm.
And directors like Jarmusch, I generally don't care for. He is kind of a one-off for me, and I don't know. I can't even completely place.
I think with Jarmusch, it seems like, you know, and he has this in common with Lynch, although Lynch it focuses more on the macabre side of things, is that Jarmusch seems to be like, he truly appreciates and is enthralled by the mundanity of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he can look at something like a guy eating a bowl of cereal and you know, kind of wrest some beauty out of that.
And it's odd that at the end of this movie, I just wanted to live a simple life.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to be a superhero after watching that movie. I want to be James Bond. I watched this, I was like, I just want to drive bus and be a nice guy and listen to stuff. That actually sounds pretty cool the way he mm-hmm. puts it. But, you know, I get the feeling, Kyle, who has been very quiet during this review, that you didn't get quite the same appreciation from this that we did. And that's fair, as I feel like I was trying to say there.
No, of course. And the thing is, I'm not being quiet because I dislike the film. I actually, you know, when we first stepped out of the theater, I felt like I didn't understand it enough to dislike it. I knew that there was something there that I wasn't really getting. And upon thinking about it, which I'm definitely going to be thinking about it some more, you know, the idea arises that everybody is kind of looking for, you know, that thing. They're just, you know, whether it's a podcast or, you know, a band that they have, or, you know, they want to be a, you know, a cook or this or that. Like, everybody has their thing, and it's so exhausting.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that until you're forced to slow down and look at it from the point of view of somebody who could care less about that. And it's really refreshing because without people like that in the world, I mean, we just all drive ourselves crazy.
Yeah, we can't all be the guy who's like, I've got to be the guy with the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I appreciated watching a film about a guy who had exactly what he wanted.
Ron Padgett is the name of the poet.
Ah, there you go. He's just so happy and content and not striving for anything more. He wants to get up, have breakfast of his same bowl, Cheerios, and what looked like chocolate milk, if it's just me. It looked like it. But eat it every day, go to work, write a little bit of poetry before his manager comes around to get him started, write a little poetry on his lunch break, walk home, spend some time with his wife, take the bulldog, the English bulldog, on a walk to the bar, have a few drinks, go home. That, his life is complete as far as he's concerned. He couldn't be happier. And when the film reaches a point where something happens to disrupt that thing for him, it is distressing as a viewer for him, despite the fact that for anybody else, you'd be like, well, yeah, that sucks. But, and you're like, and he's kind of like, nothing like this has ever happened to me before, so I don't even know how to process it. I'm like, I'm just going to be the guy I always am, but I still don't really. So I guess I'm just going to stop doing what the one thing. And there's this wonderful, almost cameo by Masatoshi Nagase, who was also in Jarmusch's Mystery Train.
That's what I figured that's where I recognized him from.
Who is a great sort of like coda character to bring the whole film, like on that level, back together. This sort of like, and almost a little weirdly, so like, because this character is so zen, and so you got to bring a Japanese guy in to go like, what'd you forget about being zen? But I really did enjoy this myself, and while admitting, if it isn't your thing, you got nothing to feel bad about. You really don't. And I give it 8 out of 10 secret notebooks.
All right. Yeah, no, if you're going to go into this thing blind, I'm going to have to steer you away. Definitely, you know, listen to what we've said here and, you know, talk to your friends who are into Jarmusch and kind of get your own opinion of whether or not this is going to be for you. If it is for you, I'm kind of leaning a little more towards the 6 out of 10 cheddar-covered Brussels sprouts.
That was weird.
Yeah.
That's a lovely scene where his wife, who keeps trying to be creative, even in the kitchen, makes a cheddar-covered Brussels sprout pie, and he's politely as hell trying to eat it, and you're like, yeah, of course that's hard.
I thought, you know, the bit with the water is was so understated, and it's such a great job by Driver. It was one of my favorite acting bits in the whole thing. And there's some great bits throughout this thing. I can't remember the guy who plays Everett, who was also on The Good Place.
William Jackson Harper.
And I love him on The Good Place, and it's you know, nice to see him popping up in a film so quickly. I thought he did a terrific job in this. The guy who plays the bartender, the guy the woman who plays his girlfriend, everybody in this, I think does a great job. And you know, Jarmusch is a good you know, he knows how to drive his actors, if you will. Yeah, I'm definitely, I think, pretty much right where Chris is on this, in that I would recommend it highly to anyone who's a Jarmusch fan. I would recommend it outright to most people who find enjoyment in art house stuff, and people beyond that, like, you know, if mainstream things are more your thing, do a little research at the very least. You know, it's certainly not for everyone, but it's right up there in you know, what I look for in you know, a lyrical art house flick. And I found this very light, and I found it very hopeful. You know, I think it says a lot about, you know, personal contentment, and you know, oddly enough, our drives. I thought it was well done. I loved the setting. I loved
New Jersey. No one has ever said that.
Yeah.
I love the setting of New Jersey.
Uh-huh. You know,
What's the name of that town this movie was set in?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Patterson, goddammit. Everything is Patterson.
Yeah, they're Patterson.
Town.
Driver's Patterson. There's yeah. you know.
The book by the author that he loves is called Patterson.
By William Carlos Williams, and William Carlos Williams is from Patterson, as is Luke Stello and several other famous people. Scarily
who
enough,
the fuck is Luke Stello?
Luke Costello.
Oh, Luke Costello. I thought you said Luke Stello.
No.
Like, Elvis Costello's brother?
I know Luke Costello. It's all good.
But I had a very, very good time with this. And yeah, it's a movie that you know, made me feel, you know, content and hopeful. And that's a nice thing. And, you know, it does have a zen simplicity to it. I'll give it a pretty hearty recommendation of 8 out of 10 of Frank O'Hara's Lunchbox Poems, which you should check out.
I will say that, like I was referencing earlier, that whole idea that you go, man, I'm kind of jealous of this guy's life, weirdly. Like, the happiness he has and in that utter simplicity. I mean, there is something to that because I'm so frantically busy all the time, and I love what I do, but it's constantly like you're just
well, and also
things that's plate spinning.
I think we leap to you know our little intellectual elite brains. They tend to leap to the idea of, well, if somebody's happy doing that, it's because they're stupid, and that's not the
not
case
the
here.
Case.
He's like, you know, no, I know what I want, and I have it. You know,
The idea of creatively expressing yourself without any desire or need
and they do,
to go past the fact that you did it is
they purposely hit upon the fact that you know, and it's you know, I won't say it's subtle, it's not harped upon, but you know, very distinctly in three places in this movie you can see that at some point Patterson was in the Marines, and you know, it makes me go like, well, maybe he's seen a little bit of the rough side of things, and you know, he's found his happiness and is perfectly content.
Yeah, he doesn't want to think about all those bodies everywhere,
and that's a hopeful thing.
Bodies bleeding and pieces falling off them,
like in Westworld.
Guns ripping, bullets shredding people. I may have just watched Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh my god.